The Web's Michael Smith. It is episode 131 of the Canes Cast, and I have one question.
Yes.
Hey, what do you say? That is not my line. It is not Michael Smith's line. That is the line of the legendary play-by-play voice of your Carolina Hurricanes, John Forslund. He is definitely a friend of the podcast and Crispy. Let me cheers to you, my friend.
Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Crispy.
That sound you heard is the crispy sound of Storm Brew, which is the official Canes beer. It's a crisp light lager made by our friends at R&D Brewing right here in Raleigh, North Carolina. At just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs per serving, it's the perfect brew for all occasions. And whenever we have Canes home games again, 16-ounce cans are just $5, and you can't go wrong with
so
that.
Economical.
Economical, crushable, crispy. You can also find them at most major retailers. New store locations are being added daily, but as always, be sure to be safe. Keep your social distance. Grab your Storm Brews. Head back home. Yep. Enjoy them in the comfort of your own home so we can all get through this and get back to enjoying Storm Brews in a more social setting.
Absolutely. Hopefully we can, in the coming months, reduce our social distancing and all enjoy a Storm Brew from R&D Brewing, which brings you the Canes Cast. That, by the way, is Michael Smith sipping a Storm Brew, nothing else. And if you want to know from the intro to the show...
Hopefully it even comes through. I don't know.
It does.
Okay.
It does. I can hear it. Hopefully from the intro to the show, you figured out that John Forslund will be our guest here today on the podcast, today when you hear this, which will be a Monday.
Yeah, Monday, March 30th. We're pre-recording this.
Yes. So if anything changes between our pre-record and Monday the 30th, so as of right now, should we tell them the day that we're recording this?
Yeah, it's Thursday, March 26th.
So with that being put on the table, we're going to go off of the information that we know for March 26th. If anything changes, I'm sure that Michael and I will make an amendment to the podcast.
It's such a fluid situation. I don't think anything's going to change with the league, with
anything,
scheduling.
To be truthful with
you. Between when we're recording this and when this podcast hits. But just good to know and good to put it to frame, this conversation with John and what we talk about afterwards. Good to frame it with keeping in mind that we pre-recorded this and things are very rapidly changing in this situation, and we could very easily have some more changes over the weekend. But we don't want to hold up this interview too much longer, but because it's a really good chat with the Hurricanes play-by-play voice. You've heard him on Fox Sports Carolinas. You've heard him on NBC, NBCSN. You know him. You love him. John Forslund.
You have no idea how happy we are to say hello to the man who is finally out of his basement. That would be John Forslund, your play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. John, first things first, great to talk to you. You have no idea how good it is to hear your voice, but the important question is how are you and how did you make it through those 2 weeks of self-quarantine after you found out that you had to stay in your basement after everything that happened with us on the road?
Well, it's great to hear both of you and be in this situation with you guys. And I'm fine. I mean, I got through it okay. It was, at times excruciating and mundane mentally, a little unnerving because of the circumstance the world is in. I watch way too much cable news. I wouldn't suggest that anybody do that. and you know what? The surrealness of the departure is the one thing that I remember, especially with you guys, is because when we landed, I was trying to, engage people, and I understand now why people kind of running the other direction away from me. But we kind of talked on the tarmac, both of you guys, and I talked to both of you, and we're like, okay, see you later. And who knew then what we're into now? And I went through my period and did what I was supposed to do, which is a small sacrifice. But I had no clue where it was going. And couldn't get tested, still haven't been. I hope that, you know, 14 days is the cure-all. I don't think it is, but that's the kind of the ground rules we're all playing by right now. But I really appreciate, you know, both you guys reached out during this, which I think is really important. I know, Mike, you can relate to it on a very, very more serious level, what you went through in the early portion of the season. But right now, all we have is each other. We try to stay connected with our fans, try to make sense of what this is all about, with a lot of who knows and I don't know being the correct answers to just about everything, but we press on. But I just wanted to say that, and I also want to thank the fans for reaching out, because many of them did through the social media and all that stuff, and I really appreciated that.
Well, John, that's what I wanted to ask you, and I hate to say I'm trying to put a positive spin on it, but what did that do for you to see the hockey community reach out to you the way that they did when they found out you were going to be going through this?
Yeah, it means a lot, doesn't it? I know you went through it.
Yeah.
It means a lot. Like, I heard from people that I talk to on a daily basis. I heard from people that I haven't talked to in years. And it was great to reconnect. So when people ask me about my daily regimen and what I went through to get through each day, and did you read books, did you binge watch television shows, movies, and so on, I was on the phone quite a bit. And then also, people wanted to talk about this. I had a boatload of interviews. And my only point in doing any of those was to get out there that, you know, my job is public. And because of that, maybe a message can get out there of what we all need to do. And so it would have been very easy to throw my arms up and say, I feel 100%. I'm done with this. You know, halfway through, I felt like doing that. But I decided, okay, I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to stay true to what I said at the beginning. And get through it. And I think if we all kind of apply ourselves the way we're supposed to under these circumstances, hopefully this thing will flatten out and we get back to normal at some point.
From your perspective, John, because it feels like we were on that 5-game road trip about 2 years ago. Everything happened so quickly. Everything escalated so quickly. So we go on the road and it goes from everything is operating just about normal to then we have the restrictions of media talking to players. And then all of a sudden, everything sort of gets real, for lack of a better term. The NBA has to suspend their season. Then there's the uncertainty with the NHL. And then obviously we fly home the next day. The NHL suspends their season, or presses pause, I guess, is the official term. So from your perspective, and you have one of the more unique perspectives because of the hotel room you stayed in Detroit, just how quickly did everything come together? And was it almost kind of a blur just how fast everything happened?
Yeah, that's a great question. Michael, great question. So I did 21 games in February, okay, that bled over into March. 21 in February alone. And there was one stretch in February I did 8 games in 9 nights in 8 different cities. So the only reason I bring that up is because when you go through something like that, you become numb to a lot of different things. You become numb to the world. You become numb to the travel aspect of it all. You basically are focused completely on your job alone, and that's how you get through the sleep deprivation and everything else that comes attached with that to kind of get through. But I bring that up only because that's kind of the cycle I was in when we were in Detroit. Resting a little bit, had some off days, and because of that, you know, was not taking this situation very seriously. You know, I'm not afraid to admit I was in the bin of sarcasm. And what is going on here? Are you serious? We're going to use a microphone on the end of a hockey stick to talk to a player.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. As late as the night before, the Wednesday before, I was texting our good friend, Mike Sunheim, and blasting him on various things just to get a rise out of him. You both know I do, right? So I was sloughing everything off as usual. And then this Oklahoma City thing happens with the NBA. And in real time, we're kind of going through it. And he says, are you watching this? I said, yeah, this is unbelievable. And then the name of Rudy Gobert comes out, who, honestly, I don't follow the league. I had no idea who the guy was. He obviously has no clue who I am. But, you know, we're now looking back at what he did. I believe it was on the Monday at the press conference. Mm-hmm. And then Mike says to me, did you see this? And I said, that's regrettable. That's too bad. And we went to sleep. And the very next day, he's getting on the bus telling me I was in the guy's room. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And then my life changes to the point of, okay, I'm going to call my doctor now, Josh Bloom, and he's going to tell me I'm going to get tested. And we're going to know one way or the other, and I can get on with my life. I'm either going in quarantine, or I can just, I have no symptoms, and I'm clear, and I'm good. But then he tells me, you don't qualify for a test. This testing thing is a big problem, which we know it is now.
Yep.
So now you're going to be in self-quarantine. Here's the protocol. Talk to my assistant, Amanda. She'll tell you what you can and cannot do in quarantine, not in isolation or distancing. Quarantine, like that's a different thing. So I get all my ground rules, and I come home, and I stash myself away for 2 weeks. And in the meantime, during those 2 weeks, our family changes. The kids, as you guys know, my two oldest are in college. Their lives get turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming home. They're not coming home. It was changing on almost an hourly basis. I've got one in high school. She's on hiatus. And I'm sequestered in our basement. And trust me, great setup here. We're blessed. No uncomfortable circumstances whatsoever. But mentally, I knew there were things happening in my family's life that I wasn't a part of.
Right.
Even to the point of one night, they were watching a movie and there was hysterical laughter. And I was kind of feeling sorry for myself because I wanted to be up there enjoying the movie. And I'm downstairs listening to these clowns on cable news tell me, you know, the world's ending or there's great hope. You know, it's or there's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So that you're right. It feels like a blur. It feels like years ago. It's only been a couple of weeks. And it's really surreal. That's the only way to describe it.
Yeah. And how different is it from, you know, you were around for the lockout that wiped out the entire season. You were around for the lockout that wiped out half a season. How different does this feel just because of, you know, that there was always uncertainty with labor peace and negotiations between the PA and the NHL, but this is an international pandemic where there's uncertainty in all parts of the world. So how different mentally does this feel for you?
Well, the greatest fear is fear of unknown. So when you have fear of the unknown, that supersedes everything you can go through in life. Because even, God forbid, you get a medical prognosis that isn't good, there's a buildup to it. There's a plan. There's some hope attached to it. And with God's help, you might get through it. And so even under those dire circumstances, there's a plan in place. This one here, there's no plan, no matter what anybody tells you. We have no idea where this is going. It could flatten out. It could not. And because of that, you've got all these situations, lives turned upside down, jobs lost, jobs put on hold, futures at risk, pandemonium out there. Where do I get my essentials? Is the store open? Is it not? How many people are going to be there? And am I going to get sick if I go out? You know, so all these things kind of creep into our lives. And, you know, we get to talk about it here and everybody's going through it. And so, yeah, it's way different because in the lockout circumstances before that I've been through, starting with a 7-day strike in 91-92 because of a squabble over bubble card revenue. And then you get to the 94 aborted season.
Mm-hmm.
You get to the canceled season in 04-05 and then the 12 circumstance. All of that had build up attached to it where you could pick a side or kind of understand what they're going through. And then you had an idea of what your own circumstance may or may not be based on what you're being told, you know, in terms of your employment. So everybody kind of ready for it, but then the rest of the world was existing. They had some sympathy for you, and then again, they didn't.
Yep.
In some situations, you could go out and get another job and maybe, you know, offset whatever your loss is going to be. In my own circumstance, you know, you work in broadcasting with a team in a specific sport. You just can't automatically jump to another sport and find work. So you had to go through that aspect of your own professional existence, and that wasn't easy. But it's way different than this because we all came to a screeching halt mentally, physically. I mean, everything just ended on a specific day for somebody somewhere. And because of that, it's 100% different. It's nothing, obviously, you know, history will show there's nothing like this that, you know, our generation's ever been through and hopefully never again. but I mean, that's how historic this is. But when you go from full bore to zero, you know, in the lockouts, you were coming off an off season. You're already in an off season mode, and then you're trying to start the season. Okay, the season's not going to start. Then you get to a certain date, and the season's going away completely. All right, that's something totally different because, again, you're almost braced for it. This one here, we're all going 100 miles an hour, and then it just stops. As screeching of a halt as possible. That's mind-blowing.
John, something you alluded to, and I want to go back to it. You never want to put yourself in the spotlight. Michael Smith and I know that you just want to call the games. The game speaks for all of this, but you kind of got thrust in the spotlight. Were you right away saying, okay, if people want to talk to me, I can be a face to this? Or were you kind of like, I don't want to be, you know, a face to what's going on right now. Let somebody else kind of take that spotlight. Or did you kind of feel that sense of, I have a chance where I can do something pretty important right now?
Yeah, I knew that some people knew. And because of that, I knew that the word would eventually get out. And because of that, you know, we had like an internal conversation. Okay, if this does get out, what do we do? And again, with Mike, we talked it over, Mike Sunheim, and he just said, yeah, if you're comfortable with it, then go ahead. And then I decided, okay, because it's a public job, and certainly in this market, you know, might have some kind of impact. You know, I didn't realize I'd get, you know, asked to do a variety of different platforms all over the country, but I do have a national presence too, I guess. So, you know, I figured, here's what I'll do. This is not a hero. This is not a martyr. This is not someone who's sick. This is just a normal everyday guy who's been asked to do this. And there's a lot of people out there who might be questioning whether or not we should do this. So I'm going to do it. So that's why I did that. The other decision I made was in terms of social media. I decided under the quarantine that I wasn't going to do much. And personally, like a couple people came up with some really good suggestions. Like, why don't you do a daily log of what you're doing in the bunker, right?
Yeah.
And I figured, you know what, that I could pull that off. You guys know me. We have a lot of fun. I like having fun. I could probably poke fun at myself, poke fun at the circumstance, but I decided I didn't want to do that either. And some of the stuff I see today I'm good with, and some of the stuff on social media, I'm like, you know what, this is a very serious time. I don't want to get, you know, really, you know, as low as possible with this, but I do think this is a time, for lack of a better expression, it is a war against something. So it is a war time. This is our war time. We were not alive, you know, for World War II and one and so on. I barely remember the Vietnam conflict, but I do remember it. And I do know what the world was like as a young boy, a very little boy going through that. And we do remember, you know, Desert Storm.
Yep.
And we do, you know, go back to that and remember what that was like. But nobody of our generation and below, I'm 58, can remember what the country was like during World War II. Yeah. And so I think this is close. You know, with economic despair, you know, what are we doing? A lot of hysteria, you know, until they kind of figured out how they were going to do this. You know, major corporations doing something different than they normally do to provide goods and services to help the cause. And that's what we're seeing in the country right now. So, and social media, I made that decision. I'm not gonna go there just for now, and then we'll see. But yeah, I felt that if I did some of these things, maybe some good would come from it. At least people would say, look, Forslund's put away. You know what? That good for him for doing that, maybe. And you know, maybe we should all kind of pay attention that way. And as usual in social media, there's always people who can take shots at you for doing things, right?
So yeah.
You gotta live with that. We all live with that crap.
Oh, yeah. Never read the comments, John. That's the number one key to social media. Never read the comments.
No, not from anybody.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, it's, I mean, I always think about it in terms of like in real life, if someone walked up to a stranger walked up to you and just started talking to you nonsensically like they do on social media, you wouldn't engage with them. You would just walk away, no. Probably.
That's right.
Oh,
John, when you look back at your time in isolation in the basement, how did you keep busy? I know you said you watch cable news and that drove you a bit batty, but what else did you do just to kind of stay busy and stay active, both in terms of mind and body?
Yeah, I found out really how boring I am. Like, I'm a real couple dimensions maybe to my personality in terms of my interests. So I don't have any hobbies. I'm locked in as much as I can during the hockey season with what I need to do. And then in the off season, obviously it's a great time to be with your family. I go through the trials and tribulations of my Red Sox all summer. I watch that closely. And that's it. You know, occasional game of golf. I don't consider myself an avid golfer or a daily golfer or a country clubber or anything like that. But I love the game. But that's about it, you know. And so when you're in that environment and that's kind of how you operate normally, what do you do under these circumstances? I don't read a lot. Probably should read more than I do. I did, you know, dabble a little bit in that. I don't binge watch shows. I just don't. So I didn't. I had a ton of suggestions. And then I locked in on this crisis, and because I felt I needed to. And so I watched way too much of it. And, you know, I flip around. I'm in the middle of the road. So, but in today's media world, boy, it's really frustrating to see one side, one network gives you this take, another network gives you this take. So I did a lot of that, and then tried to stay connected with people, like we said before, on the phone and through texting, in the business, friends of mine and so on, family, and then did a boatload of interviews. So my time was taken up, exercise to try and, you know, stay sane that way. And that was it. But the days became long. You know, once you get into day 7, day 8, you hit kind of the crossroads. Allergy season kicked in here. Mike goes through this. Yeah. I go through it big time.
Yep.
I started to get symptoms of allergies. I started to have some anxiety over whether I'm sick, coronavirus-wise, or I have allergies. Doc said, you know, take your medication, see what happens. I did, and it leveled off, so I knew, okay, I'm good. But the very first night I was in quarantine, I got home and got settled and was ready to go to bed. I had this coughing spell, and I sneezed a couple of times. And under normal circumstances, regular season, the summer, whatever it is, you just cough, sneeze, go to sleep. Well, that first night, I was like, what the hell? What's happening now? You know, and that went away. So I never developed any symptoms from it, but that's kind of what I did. It's not very exciting. And again, one room, even though it's comfortable, one room for 12 days is a little bit more complicated and a little bit more of a stretch than it appears at first brush.
Yeah, and John, there's one thing, because Michael and I know how much you pour into calling games and being sharp. And this is something we want to do, like a deep dive about, you know, where you started and how you got here and all of that, kind of doing a different deep dive on what's happening here. But I had in my mind, you kind of reverted back to that little kid where if there were games on TV, you were calling them. Was there any of that instinct, that itch for you to want to do that?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe my own personal space. Maybe I did watch, you know, some classic games, you know, like I watched the 1978 Stanley Cup final. And that was fun to watch because I remembered where I was when it was on. And then I went through the entire, if you notice, Major League Baseball Network has had some classic games on and some series surrounding great games. Well, I watched the 78 playoff game between the Yankees and Red Sox.
I was going to ask you if you tuned in for that, John, because I did too.
I couldn't get over how much of the game I remembered. Like most people would say, how much of the game you've forgotten. I guarantee you if you put a World Series game on, involving the Red Sox from like 04, and that incredible story, I've forgotten some of the things that happened or how they got there. But for whatever reason, I was 16. So I remember where I was. I remember who was in the room. I remembered almost pitch for pitch what happened. That's how sick that was. That's how locked in I was at that age. To watch the game and be frustrated with Don Zimmer and pitching Bob Bailey and watching this whole debacle right before my eyes, which was a microcosm of the Red Sox existence, which was a great start, no pitching, poor finish, and see you later. That's what happened all the time. and the Yankees were always right there in the middle of it and the roadblock. But that was kind of a, that was fun. And that was at a time of the day where I had, where nobody was, you know, bringing down my food or weren't, I wasn't on the phone. I had time to watch the whole thing in its entirety. And that was pretty cool.
We've talked about these last few podcasts, you know, what the certain scenarios, certain options the NHL has moving forward with this season and next season. In your, if you were commissioner in your perfect league, how would you solve the problem that is finishing this regular season, trying to do playoffs, and then fitting in a whole nother season right after it? What would you do? What would your ideal plan look like?
Well, the difference today, as opposed to, you know, many years ago, if this were to happen many years ago before this salary cap structure and the last CBA where there's, you know, 50-50 linkage, it would be probably two circumstances. You know, if you can go, you can go. And if you can't go based on this thing stretching out, then we're going to put a definitive deadline on it and get on with the next season, put an asterisk in the record book. Yep. Just like in 1919 with the Spanish flu, there'd be no Stanley Cup awarded, and we move on. But because you have all of these underlying circumstances with the finances of the game, the next salary cap, the escrow with the players, the potential to recapture television money or not, the appetite for both rights holders in Canada and in the States who are faced now without Olympics. With Olympics, it's different. With Olympics, the first time they came up with that formula about July and August, I said to myself, July 24th, the Olympics start. Just from NBC's perspective, they probably could do it, but it'd be really hard because all of their people, announcers and technicians and everyone are either in Tokyo or in Stanford, you know, doing the games from the studio, during the events from the studio. But all of the technicians, the camera people, the producers, directors are all doing Olympics that are on staff with NBC. They have to freelance everything for the NHL. That would be an undertaking. But now with that gone, there's a void. There's a programming void that they'd love to fill. I'm not 100% sure it's doable or realistic. But if that is the case, I think it changes almost on the fly how they're thinking. So I wouldn't want to be in Gary Bettman's shoes normally, and I absolutely would not want to be in his shoes right now, because you are basically dealing with a worldwide crisis, and you're trying to find a solution for your own niche, multi-billion-dollar business, and trying to figure out maybe we can, maybe we can't, but we almost have to. So if that makes any sense, I think that changes the dynamic of how they're going to approach this. So I think they're going to make every effort to do something, whatever that is. They've already said they want to make sure that they keep in place a full 82 games, yeah, no matter when it starts for next season. But they have to figure out a calendar from a business standpoint in terms of the draft and free agency and how they're going to hire people moving forward, when that date is. It certainly doesn't look like it's June 30th, July 1 anymore. And then if they do resume play, what do you do with your regular season? The more I hear about this, I hear that there is an appetite to have some type of regular season finish off. And the only, and I just heard this recently, the only reason would be to give the players almost an exhibition season before the playoffs. Now, it comes with consequence because the Hurricanes, if this happens hypothetically, will be playing for their playoff lives during this time when they're trying to hone up to get ready to play in the playoffs. Very different from, say, the Boston Bruins, who know they're in, who will be utilizing the games to get people in sync, line combinations in sync. There's a lot more, as you guys know, attached to hockey in terms of amping up and being ready to go than, say, for instance, basketball. I think the NBA could fly under the, whatever the circumstance, because as long as those guys keep themselves in ideal shape, which they can even in their homes, they can almost come off the street, throw together a game and play. Hockey needs, you know, synchronized play, a period of skating as a team in order to actually play a game correctly. You can't say, hey, we're playing, you know, after the weekend, we're playing on Tuesday. You can't do that with a hockey player. It just doesn't work. So there's a lot more because of the skating aspect that goes into it. So you get to the point at some point here where you're going to have to tell the players you're done or you can continue to train. Because right now they don't know what to do and they can't train anywhere either.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. So until that comes back into a more clear picture where guys can actually work out either in small groups at facilities or somewhere at a rink, you know, then it becomes a little bit more tangible. But I think that's what it will be. I'm not 100% sure it's a 16-team tournament or 24-team tournament or right to the playoffs or a play-in before the playoffs, maybe as a last resort. But I think they're trying to find a way to preserve some type of a regular season closure before they get to the playoffs.
Well, John, to that end, as Michael said, it feels like 2 years ago, but did you get the sense that the Canes had sort of figured it out in those last three games? I mean, especially I go to that Pittsburgh game with how they played almost letter perfect and you know, Morgan Geekie's debut. Did you get the feeling that, you know, Vincent Trocheck, who got added, Brady Shea, who got added, the new guys kind of figured out, were figuring out their roles, and this was a team that was ready to take off on a run down the stretch?
Yeah, the two things that were very important were the fact that they were on a long road trip, which always breeds, you know, camaraderie and togetherness. That's always good. And then if you have success during that road trip, it's even better because, you know, a winning atmosphere, everybody's more upbeat. The newer guys feel like they're more part of it. Both guys were blindsided by the trade. I can't speak to Sammy Vatanen because he's not in the equation as of yet. But in terms of Shea and Trocheck, they both were blindsided by the deal. There's a mourning period that's attached to that. It takes a while for guys to get over it, one, and then get acclimated to the new scene and feel like they're part of the new room, which I think was happening. But I think above all of that is Jordan Staal's words after the game in Philadelphia, where he said, and that to me was the crossroads, that this team was either going completely south or they were going to come together and start playing real hockey. And Jordan said after the Philadelphia game, if we don't wake up and get back to the finer details of the sport, the stuff that's real hard to do, we're not going anywhere. Forget about 100 shots on goal. Forget about the fancy plays. Forget about scoring and trying to score first and then getting everything else second. Let's get the puck out of the zone at the right time. Let's block shots. Let's do this as a team. And then, as you guys know, in that Philly game, they put the line of Staal, Williams, and McGinn together. It gave the team a line that, you know, brings experience, leadership, and they play the game in a grounded sense. And then I think that went right into Long Island, which carried over into Pittsburgh, which brought them into Detroit. And Detroit was probably the tougher of the three games, actually, because of where Detroit is and the fact that those games are never easy to win. And to be fair, Detroit's probably faster as a team than Pittsburgh and certainly the Islanders. The Islanders don't have a lot of team speed. So that was a difficult game, and they got through that one, and Mrazek comes back. So, yeah, I think they were on their way to something. Unfortunately, it means nothing. And when they do come back, if they do, you can't even – somebody asked me, you know, on an interview, north of the border on a major show. I got two questions that were a little interesting. One was about Justin Falk, which I, under these circumstances, I still don't have any clue what importance or pertinence that has, okay?
All right.
But I answered it. And then the other guy asked me, how would Carolina fare in a playoff series against Washington when they resume? I was like, how do you know? How does anybody know how any of these players are going to be or how the coaches are going to handle these guys when they come back, other than to watch the first game and take it from there? Because you don't know how 38-year-old Justin Williams will handle this stoppage. How 43-year-old Zdeno Chara comes back with the Bruins. How some of the elite goalies, Vasilevsky, Rask, in such great rhythm, you know, at the end of that season, you know, how do they come back? Do they have the same level? Are they fighting the puck now? Have they been able to stay sharp? So it's anybody's ball game when they do resume. And whatever happened, it's like that season they should give out the awards right now, because that's the season. Whatever happens next is kind of icing on the cake, a way to get more money recaptured, a way to spark interest and morale in the country, and kind of close it out the right way and give out a champion. But I'm not sure that's the real Stanley Cup champion, no matter what happens.
Because of that, though, would you like to see an expanded playoff, John, or we need to keep it 8 from each conference? If you had the pick, what would you do? Would you open it up because of how special this, and I hate to use the word special, because of the circumstance that we're in, or you try to keep it, you know, the 8 that are in or the 8 that go?
I like 8 and 8 because I'm on that side of the ledger, because when Seattle comes in, we're at 32, and then you have 50-50.
Right.
50% of the teams make the playoffs. And I'm old enough to remember when 16 of 21 made the playoffs.
Yeah.
That was a joke. I mean, that was like, you have 21 teams in the league and 16 make the playoffs, really?
Yep.
And I think that had a lot to do with the credibility of the NHL at that time. Other leagues were looking at it. Even, you know, Major League Baseball was only allowing 4 teams in.
Yeah.
And they were like, are you serious? This is what this league does? 16 of 21 make the playoffs. So I think there's appetite to expand the playoffs a little bit and have a battle for the last 2 wild cards. And I think that if they do resume play, that might happen. And it might happen maybe they will never get to the regular season equation. And if they do, then yes, it will expand and it'll be exciting. And I think the people that are in favor of this moving forward will get their way eventually. I think expanded playoffs are coming. I'm not a fan of it. I still think there's plenty of, you know, all you're doing is just lowering the bar down to 10, maybe, and you're still going to have the same circumstance. You know, I just think if you get in at 8, you get in at 8. And, you know, there's also formulas out there about, well, it gives the first and second place team in each conference more time to rest and more time to be ready, and they get a reward for being so good because they almost get a bye as these other teams play in. As you guys know, hockey's a rhythm sport. You don't want a lot of time off. You don't want to sit around for a week and then have to play.
Right.
It almost plays right into the hands of an upset. So I like 8 and 8, and there's some people on that side, and I think there's more people on the other side. And to answer your question, I think it's coming, no matter what any people who have the mindset of the 8 and 8 that we have. I think the expanded playoffs are coming.
I would be all right just this year if we talked about expanding it to 10, because you could make the case for the teams that were fighting for the playoffs. And John, if you look at the standings, it's really just 10 teams in each conference right now that really you can make that claim to. I'd be willing to do that, but I don't, you know, when I'm seeing everybody gets in or it's 24 teams, that's now you are changing kind of the playing field in the game with how it goes into. And look, it's a league that loves to maintain its integrity with what it does, but there is also something else about what this league needs to do. And it's what you said. Can you have like a preseason or a training camp, or do you almost have to say you get a week and here we go, guys, and we move from there?
Yeah. Well, they've done a week before. Yeah. You know, like they've done a week in the 48 game schedule.
Right.
With no preseason games, just inter-squad games, and then you play, and it was fine. It worked for that. It's not optimum. It's not something that, you know, the coaches would want. So I think, like I say, I just heard this idea that, you know, it might be a circumstance where they try to cram in the regular season, and these are just people thinking out loud, no one that really counts anyway. But it's interesting to hear that might be something they might look at, because that gives teams an opportunity to come back. It gives, if you're going to do that, it gives the teams that are long gone a chance to recapture a little bit of their gate, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then you're almost playing an exhibition game. If you're Boston and you have Detroit on your schedule, you're playing an exhibition game, basically. But in terms of, like, the New York Rangers are a perfect example. Columbus, you know, the Columbus is let's just say the Rangers. The Rangers season has been, you know, off the charts good, considering where everybody thought they would be at the start of the season. It was a write-off. It's a rebuild. They're done. Even though they signed Panarin, you know, how's this going to work? Young team. Well, they're right there. And so to have them be involved in a play-in would be really good. My only hope in terms of the expanded playoffs in, say, the next season, if we get to it, it becomes the new norm, is I hope the play-in's a one-and-done game. And I'm not 100% sure that flies, because then you're going to have owners who want one date,
yeah.
and it'll be two out of three. You know, so that gets to then the high-end teams waiting too long to play. That's what I'd be concerned about.
Yep.
There's,
I agree.
I was going to say, there's something else while we got you, John. You mentioned Zdeno Chara. You mentioned Justin Wimps. There are a lot of great players who, you know, I'm wondering, are we going to see, I hope we see them again, and maybe right. that this will bring them back for another year. Do you think that this might be the end to a lot of great careers that we've seen in the National Hockey League, the way that this season's gone, because it is hard to stop and start for these guys to come back and play?
Well, I mean, yeah, look what happened. I just pick out one guy. Look what happened to Ron Francis.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what happened.
Yeah.
So he got traded to the Maple Leafs. It ended. We had the 04 draft here. He actually did a clinic for the National Hockey League at the, I still call it the Rec Zone, Raleigh Center Ice, but at the time the Rec Zone. And he did it in Maple Leaf sweats because he was a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs, which was, you know, really hard on the eyes at the time.
Yeah.
But anyway, the next season was canceled. And so his every wish was to play again, and thought he was going to be able to play a shortened season in 04-05. It never happened, and he never played again. And that was the end of his career. So these stoppages will end careers. And if you look back at the history of the game and were to look at certain guys who came back, and this goes for the high-end players like Ronnie, and the vast majority are middle-of-the-road veterans, which we don't have a lot of anyway in the game anymore because of yeah. the salary structure. But in those days, we did. There were a lot of guys, the Scott Walkers, the Aaron Wards, you know, a lot of these guys that were in that, you know, neighborhood who, career-wise, age-wise, and then salary-wise, who couldn't come back and play, and that's how it ended. That's tough. That's because as players, they want to go out on their own terms, which only a few get to, because at every level, the game will tell you when it's over. And then this happens. And it's not really the game telling the guys, it's the financial side of the business telling the guys they were finished. And when they come back on the other side, they don't have a career. That's tough to swallow.
Yeah. And it would be strange, I think, too, you know, imagining the NHL trying to come back later this year and then have guys like, you know, what Maniscalco mentioned, Zdeno Chara, Justin Williams, would they be able to jump back into it, you know, given
right.
their age and their health and everything? And how right. do you maintain integrity with this year's rosters, quotes around that, when you have guys like that right. who might be up in the air?
And it's the skating aspect.
Yep.
I keep going back mm-hmm. to it. It's the skating aspect of their training that's impossible for anybody to do. If you're just going to take Justin Williams in this case, you know, where is he skating right now? Nowhere. And where will he skate when they do come back? And how much does he need? And then what does it actually look like when he tries to play? Because if we're fair and we look at the way Willie has played, you know, he came back, he had the shootout success early, and it was like a storybook. Then I thought he was hitting a wall for a little while.
Yeah.
And it looked like, oh boy, this is not as easy as it appears. It's hard, as I always say, tongue in cheek. Come off the couch and play. It's awfully hard to do that in a league where skating and youth are at the forefront. How do you get up to speed? So how does this affect the players? How does a national or global pandemic affect, you know, their training, and how do they recapture that aspect of it? That'll be interesting, because there were players that came out of 04-05 that were not the same when the league resumed in 05-06. It was just like, wow, it hit them quicker than others. Others got through it. They were okay. But there were players you could see. This is not the same guy. This is the game's being played differently now. He can't handle it. And so, you know what? I think a lot of times we look at pro athletes and we look at them and kind of like, oh, they've got life by the tail. They don't. They do in many ways. They have a lot of worries if they're lucky enough that we all have financially that, you know, that gets taken care of. That's a small percentage. A lot of these guys have short careers, and their opportunities are few and far between, and then they never get another chance at it. Then they have to figure out what they're going to do financially and, you know, with the rest of their lives at a young age. So it's not easy, no question.
Well, John, it's even if it's just theoretical, it's good to talk hockey again with you.
You have no idea, man. None.
I know.
And it's great to hear your voice after you escape quarantine symptom-free, which is really the most important thing of it all. And now you're back with your family, spending time with those closest to you. And that's what's important in a time like this.
Well, you know what, too, is that it's been like therapy for me to hear you two guys. So I appreciate it. And the other thing is, I always say, there's a blue sky on the other side. Okay, so that's Pollyanna stuff, but it's true. And what I mean by this is when the game does come back, the fans are going to be re-energized. But those of us lucky enough to work in the game, you watch what happens. You'll view it differently again because it's been taken away. And anytime something that's easily taken for granted, just because of the circumstance is taken away, when it comes back, and it happened throughout all those stoppages, it was like a revival. And that's how it's going to feel. So I think that's what we all have to concentrate on, and that's important for the fans. It's important to just kind of look after your families, get through this the best we can, and then when this does come back, you know, it's just an entertainment portion of our lives, but it's a big part of everybody's life.
And
morale-wise, we're all going to need it, and I can't wait for that day.
You big lug. I'm happy that you're out of quarantine and hopefully soon, like you said, can't wait to see you and start bringing the games to everybody. John, thanks so much.
Well, again, you know, most of my life on the road's in quarantine anyway nowadays, so it's just an extension of that.
Take care of yourself, and hopefully we get to see you real soon.
Okay, boys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Our thanks to John Forslund for an excellent chat, an extended chat over the phone with the man who was quarantined and is now free and symptom-free, which is the most important part.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have no idea how much I wish we were able to have that interview in person.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the deep dives that I can't wait for us to bring you here on Canes Cast, how John started, how he got to this level, and all of the things that went in between. But just great to hear from him. And please, folks, heed his words when he's talking about, you know, social distancing and doing what we have to do. And this is our fight where, you know, I hate to put it in the terms of, you know, tighten the belt a little bit. Although, Smitty, you can't tighten your belt anymore. Where's Paul Kropelka when we need him for belts for Smitty?
Yeah, what is Paul up to these
days?
Well,
we had to put belts for Smitty on hold for right now. Paul's okay. I actually texted him the other day and checked in how he's doing.
Oh, that's good.
And he told me, I'm doing good, kid. How are you?
Staying sane. We're all trying to stay sane.
That is the number one key for right now.
Hopefully he's staying sane with some deep thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. He is. He actually wanted me to put out a deep hockey thought once a day.
Oh, you should. Like, that's a great idea.
And I don't know if I can get to that point because I'm walking through the line, kind of like what John is with social media. And I don't know how you feel about this. I feel that we have kind of a responsibility because of our job, because of our role, because of what we do, a connection to, you know, the team and what's going on, but also a connection with the fans, Michael. So I've crafted some tweets. This sounds way more egotistical than I thought it was going to be when I started down this road.
Tell me more. You've crafted some tweets.
I've sat down in the lab and formulated ideas that I would like to put out to the masses that follow us.
280 characters or less.
Exactly. But I went to this point of, you know, how much do you need like a little bit of humor or levity, but are people also counting for us on serious things? So if you put out, you know, too many things that are kind of, I use the word sarcastic because you know me, that's my nature, that's what I've been, but sarcastic or kind of along those lines, I don't want people to read it and be put off by it.
Yep.
But at the same time, I just don't want to tweet out, here's the news of the day. You know, just kind of strike that balance. So
yeah, it is a fine line because there is information that needs to be disseminated. Not as much information now, I don't think, as there was maybe a week or two ago when the pause was so fresh and so new. I think we've sort of settled into a rhythm. At least I like to think we've sort of settled into a rhythm of, you know, this new normal for now. And I think levity does help. And hopefully hopefully this podcast brings you, the listeners, a sense of normalcy, I guess, and potentially some levity, and just maybe takes your minds off what's happening, you know, outside the walls of your home. Because it can't, like John said, it can be scary and it can be daunting, and we'll all get through this together, and hopefully we'll be talking actual hockey sooner rather than later.
Well, I can tell you, Michael, this brings me a lot of joy and a needed escape from what's going on. Just the ability to talk to you, to do a podcast, and have some semblance of normalcy of doing this right now. And again, we appreciate everybody who tunes in and finds Kane's Cast either on, you know, iTunes or Google Play, or if you go through the Kane's website to get it. Today, we really, of course, always appreciate those who give us 5 stars, best friends for life.
Best friends.
4 stars, really good, solid people. I really appreciate you.
I consider us to just be friends.
Well, we go to lunch with friends.
Platonic friends.
We go to lunch with friends.
Yeah.
You know, we'll go out, we'll hang out with friends.
Maybe like once a month.
Yeah.
And we're not stretching it here.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit nicer to that.
What are you doing for lunch today? And, you know, I might be busy. But then one day I'll be like, okay, we'll extend the olive branch.
No, I know you far too well. There are a lot of people who you go to lunch with who I don't think that you extend the olive branch. I think you just want to go to lunch.
Look, I take this 5-star rating very seriously.
Yes, you do as well. You should. But like 4-star at this time, 4-star, you know, we appreciate it. 3 stars, even I'm really still appreciating the 3 stars because you're giving us a chance. 2 stars, all right. And 1 star again. Why you bother? Don't.
2 stars, if I pass you on the street, I'm going to look the other way.
I'll nod.
No.
We're not going to have a conversation.
No, I'm going to look the other way.
I'll nod. I might say hello.
1 star, you're completely dead to me.
1 star. Why are you bothering? You're the person who just wants to leave a comment on Twitter and watch the world burn.
3 stars, I would nod and move on. The thing about less than, you know, if you're leaving a 1-star review, why are you even listening?
Well, because you want to see what happens.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there who like to do things like that, but in today's day and age, hopefully we're giving you 5-star entertainment here and information.
Hopefully so. And hey, if we're doing a 1-star job, sure, let us know.
Oh, absolutely.
But
we won't believe you, but I mean, go right ahead.
I don't believe you. We're certainly not doing a 1-star job because we're drinking a 5-star beer.
Storm Brew.
Made by our friends at R&D Brewing.
The official sponsor of Kane's Cast.
The official sponsor. And Storm Brew, also the official Kane's beer. It's a crisp light lager.
Oh, so crispy.
It's made by R&D Brewing. They make a ton of other beers,
yes,
too. So if Storm Brew isn't, you know, what you're looking for.
It should be.
It should be. But if it's not, if you want to go heavier, you can go 7 Saturdays, get a little IPA.
7 Saturdays is a nice beer.
You could go with the Riviera, which is a Mexican lager.
Yeah.
There are plenty of options for you, but Storm Brew is really the perfect beer for all occasions because it's just 97 calories and 2.4 carbs per serving.
Yeah.
And it's a 4.2 ABV, so you can crush a number of them.
Crushable, crispy. We like it a lot.
We do like it a lot, and we appreciate Storm Brew for sponsoring the podcast and keeping the lights on.
This is a crisp light lager for all seasons, and our good friend Jordan Martinook, who we were really happy to talk to last week, find out what he's doing up in Western Canada, enjoying some snow in the great outdoors. Good stuff. You know what it's time for right now?
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
Let me know if I've asked you this before, Michael.
Okay, I'm ready.
But if when the hockey season resumes, we will not finish the regular season, we just go right to the playoffs.
Sounds familiar. Think I've heard it once or twice.
Probably twice. This could be a third.
This is a third time. My answer remains right to playoffs, but with an amended playoff format. I don't know how the league's going to pull it off. That's, as John said, he doesn't wish to be Gary Bettman. I don't wish to be Gary Bettman either, because no matter which way you slice it, some teams are going to get the short end of the stick, and that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine.
That's going to happen.
That's the way it's going
to
be.
But the other side of it, and because we talked about this with John Forslund, and again, thanks to John for joining us right now.
Oh, ding dong.
Yeah, we're recording from my house. So,
did the cat ring the doorbell? The cat's coming running towards us right now.
Generally, this is a positive because the cat hates the doorbell.
Okay.
So the fact that the cat did not take off upstairs and is now thinking about, do I go and hang out with the Web's Michael Smith, or do I go to my safe space, which is mine and bathroom?
Oh.
Yeah, we have a bathroom up off of our bedroom.
I think the cat might have rung the doorbell.
He might have. He's very smart.
Yep.
He either runs in there or he runs under our bed. Under the bed is the panic room.
Hi.
Pretty much.
Where were we?
Oh, I was just going to say expanded playoffs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you in favor of it? Because I'll go back to it. 10 teams. Because look at the standings.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really think that there are only two teams on the outside looking in both conferences that can make a case. I don't want 24 teams. There's no reason to drag this out. But John brought up a good point. It's a chance to recoup some lost revenue.
Right. Well, that's the whole thing. I think the whole idea of finishing the regular season, getting into the playoffs, it's the idea. Yeah, the players are going to want that money for escrow. The league's going to want the money from simply the revenue standpoint. So I can totally see the reasoning behind it. But I do think we're in such an unprecedented time that if you have to take such unprecedented measures and bend the rules a bit and buck tradition, that I don't think anyone would have a problem with it. I think it makes sense in a time like this. When that'll happen, I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's so much uncertainty. And we can mention now that the league has postponed the draft combine, the draft itself, and the NHL awards. So that was seemingly inevitable, because if you're talking about restarting the league in mid-May, which I don't think will happen,
no.
that's just the way
things are going right now, mid-May would be beyond optimistic.
Right. You still couldn't hold the draft combine, hold the awards in June, because you'd probably be playing well into July. So whatever scenario happens, whether the league comes back in mid-May or the league comes back in August or September, or you just move right on to next season, those events are going to have to be rescheduled. So that was seemingly inevitable. And I'll be interested to see where the NHL goes from here. The NBA still hasn't made a decision on the remainder of their season. The MLB was supposed to have opening day today, and today I reference is Thursday, March 26th when we're recording this, not Monday, March 30th when you're listening to this. So every sports league is in the same sort of uncertainty boat, and the whole world is in this uncertainty boat. And so I don't know. I don't know where it's going to go from here. I don't know when a decision will be made on where it goes from here. But I think we're it's unusual circumstances, so I wouldn't be surprised to see an unusual solution to finish the season and get into playoffs.
Yeah, but to the other end of it, a question, not a like a take it. Do you think we're going to get a finish to the 2019-2020 season?
I would like to think there would be, because otherwise you have teams and players who, you know, put all this energy and literal blood, sweat, and tears into 60, 70 games of a season. I would like to see some sort of bow put on it, but again, that gets into the whole unusual circumstances, unusual finish that I'd like to think everybody would accept just because of, you know, what's going on right now. But I would like to see a bow. Hopefully they can figure out a way to do it, knowing, of course, though, that it's so tough to say where this goes from here and when it could be rectified. So I hope we get to see a bow. I mean, would you like to see some sort of fitting into the season?
Yes.
Like, I don't want to see, you know, I'd like to see the Stanley Cup awarded for the season, you know. And whoever wins that Stanley Cup is, it's going to be strange. It's going to be weird, you know, if it's July or if it's August or September or whatever. But at least it provides that natural ending to a season that you typically get.
Yeah. I just want an end to it because of what you said. We've passed the three-quarter pole, and this was nothing. The stoppage was nothing to do with what had to go on as far as the players stopping. There was a work stoppage. This had everything to do with something that was out of everybody's control. So I think the players who were playing, they all deserve a fitting natural end to this season. That to me is why I want to see it. You deserve to get an end, and the fans deserve to get an end as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I like seeing the news out there of this is going to go to September. You know, one of those kind of finishes. It's going to be a bit much, but at the same time, if that's what it takes, that's what it takes. I would ask you, do you have a like it, keep it that is of your own? Well, I'll definitely keep that. There's no doubt in my mind.
Does that answer your question?
A no, as usual?
I think it's a...
Well, let me retort. Okay. That being put out there, there is a like it, keep it from one of our loyal listeners. This is Mike B, not to be confused with Mike D of the Beastie Boys.
Mikey B.
Call me Swaggy B. That's how you can follow him. Like it, keep it. There will be a new sound drop added to Kane's cast before the next NHL game is played. 5 stars all around, fellas. Thank you, Mikey B. Thank you.
Mikey
Best
B.
friends. Best friends for life. So they're walking by right now as who? Exactly.
I love when we have random drop-in guests. Wait, did the Alexa just light up?
Yeah. Because we have a notification because we have a delivery up.
Oh, gotcha.
You want to hear it?
Yeah.
I don't know if we'll be able to hear it. Alexa, notification.
One new notification. From Amazon Shopping. 11 by 17 frame has arrived.
All right. My frame's here.
I don't know if that picked it up all the way, but scintillating podcast material right
Ooh-wee.
There.
Wee. Cannot wait.
Hey, you're an hour into this. This is exactly what you want to hear an hour into a podcast. Is
generally,
Alexa reading out notifications.
Well, you noticed there it was lit up, so
yeah.
Figured we might as well make the most of the room. All right, is there going to be a new drop added?
Probably.
I think we've got to go back through Trip.
I mean, do we count the new Justin Williams sound drop at the end of the podcast? I don't think that's new.
Have you loaded that in yet?
I haven't loaded it in.
Oh, my goodness.
But it is a part of the podcast, so I don't think we can count that. Right. I would say there's a good chance a new sound drop will be added, potentially even by the next podcast.
Oh.
Because when I do add that last Justin Williams, thank you all for listening to this podcast.
I had to put your laugh in on there.
into the soundboard. I do plan on adding maybe one or two more.
All right. There are, by the way, in the words of Calvin Candy, from Django Unchained. You have
Leonardo DiCaprio, by the way, so good in that movie.
You have my interest, but you had my interest, but now you have my curiosity.
He's so good.
You know what else he was good in? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Basically every movie he's been in except Titanic, which, by the way, hot take incoming. Ooh. Terrible movie.
Oh, it's awful.
Okay.
Awful.
Maybe not as hot as I thought it was.
I have never seen that movie in one sitting.
It's so bad.
I didn't go to the theater to see it.
This
goes back to my rant from last Kane's cast about people being upset about people watching games that they know the outcome to before you even paid $8.50 to go see Titanic. You knew the boat sunk.
Yeah, but you didn't know how cruel Rose would be in not letting Jack onto the door.
This,
that's Ray Rose.
Speak of a
calling
speak
you out.
Of a hot take. DiCaprio bothered me in that movie.
DiCaprio was terrible.
Bye, Jack.
And so then, so I saw him in Titanic first. And then
so that ruined everything for you.
Right. And then I heard he was in The Departed, and I was like, well, hang on a second. But then I went to go see The Departed.
Somebody walking by right now. Did you enjoy the movie Titanic? She knew it. See? Still paid to see it anyway, though. Yeah.
That's a thing that happened.
It is.
But
people like saw it 20 times.
It's a terrible movie. But so, and then I went to see, so
not even Billy Zane could save that.
And I was like, well, how good is this movie going to be? Because it's got Leonardo DiCaprio. Turns out The Departed is great. Leo is fantastic in it.
I still wish that he and Matt Damon switched their characters.
So another,
because I would have liked to have seen DiCaprio. Is this a spoiler on The Departed?
It's fine. It's the statute of limitations.
Like, it's long past. It's almost on 15 years now, I think, with The Departed.
Probably.
Anyway, I would have liked to have seen DiCaprio play the bad guy, play the mole. Just, I think that would have been better.
Yeah.
That's just me and my take. By the way, watch the original version of the movie. It's a Japanese film.
I've heard about that, yeah.
Subtitles, it's as good.
I'm okay with subtitles.
It's as good. Maybe better.
Here's another hot take since we've veered off the path at this point. James Cameron.
Oh, by the way, say goodbye to Bill Berniston.
Oh, bye, Bill.
Yeah.
This is Bill Berniston coming to you live from the Canes locker room.
Thanks for coming on our podcast last week, Bill.
And thank you for sticking as long as you did on this one. We gave you basically an hour.
We're really venturing into the weeds here. I think anything goes beyond an hour. I think that's a podcast rule.
All right. I just
is that a podcast rule?
That's a huge podcast rule. So Titanic came out, that had to have been in the 90s, right? 97? Yeah, 97.
Yeah.
Was Titanic. I'd seen him in The Basketball Diaries, which was pretty good, but I didn't care for him, but he was really good. This Boy's Life with Robert De Niro, which a friend of mine, it's not a comedy, but he would reenact Robert De Niro out of the movie, and it would make me laugh, but not a really good movie. And then he was unbelievable in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, where he played Johnny Depp's brother.
Yeah.
Then Romeo and Juliet, Titanic, awful, just terrible. The Man in the Iron Mask, garbage. The Beach was terrible. Gangs of New York, what a colossal waste of time.
I was wondering what you thought of that film.
This is what I thought about Gangs of New York. And this is true. I could call my good friend Chris Pearson about this because he and I are movie buffs. Daniel Day-Lewis was amazing in that movie. But you can have bad movies with great performances. Well,
Daniel Day-Lewis, I don't know if there's a movie that he's bad in.
But you can have, you know, great movies with bad performances.
Absolutely.
And bad movies with great. He is the case of a bad movie, great performance, Daniel Day-Lewis. Everything else in that movie is just a hot steaming pile of garbage. Before that movie came out, like the trailers came out, and I told my buddy, I'm like, this movie's going to be like 3 hours long,
yeah,
and it's going to be trash. And he goes, we're going to go see it. And I'm like, I'm not going to go see it. I'll wait. And he went and saw it, and I go, I will bet you $10 this movie is garbage, and you're going to be mad at it. So he calls me the next day, and he goes, it was great. It was the best movie. I owe you $10 because it was garbage.
Yeah.
But then he goes on a roll.
A complete roll. And he doesn't win an Oscar until The Revenant, which here's maybe another hot take. He was probably better in some other movies.
Oh, absolutely he was. But that's kind of the...
That's just the way it goes.
Not a lifetime achievement, but it's like getting to the... It's like being a all-star or a Pro Bowl player. Like, yeah, you've done something long. Okay, you're in. We got to get you in here.
Yeah, but it's not to take away from what he did in The Revenant because it was... I thought it was...
Oh, he was really good.
It was really good. It just...
The Bear should have gotten the Oscar over him, though. That's just me.
I just thought he was better in other movies.
Catch Me If You Can. He was amazing. Him and Tom Hanks. If you haven't seen that, Smitty, you need to see it.
I don't think I have.
Oh, you need to see it. I have it. You can borrow it. The Aviator, which is about Howard Hughes. Another long movie, but it's really good.
Yeah.
And that was where I'm like, do I like Leonardo DiCaprio as an actor? No, but he was great in that. Then The Departed. Then Blood Diamond. He was really good. Body of Lies, not so much. Revolutionary Road was good. Tough movie to get through. Shutter Island was good. But then he starts going into the whole Shutter Island Inception things that are going on.
Love it.
J. Edgar, I wanted it to be better, but he was good as J. Edgar Hoover. just moving on. And then he shows up in Django Unchained. Amazing. Then he does The Great Gatsby. He's good, but Baz Luhrmann directed it and ruined the movie.
Yeah, he was great in that movie. The movie itself doesn't bother me too much, though. I don't mind it.
It's weird because movies that people have really liked him in, I have not liked.
The movie?
Yeah, like Titanic. Oh, he's great in Titanic.
I didn't even think he was great in Titanic. I thought he was pretty bad in Titanic.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, and just going down the list, The Great Gatsby, he was good. The movie was bad, but people want to say that. And people like The Wolf of Wall Street. I wanted to like that movie. I did not like it.
Oh, I really liked it.
I did not. But go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, so good. I think we've discussed this.
I saw it the other day for the first time.
Have we discussed this on the podcast before that it is peak Tarantino? Like everything that Tarantino is about is represented in that movie.
Here comes my hot take, and you're not going to like
Uh-oh.
It.
Oh, no.
You're not going to like
oh,
it.
Oh, no. Duck, everybody.
Everybody, every actor in that movie plays their role perfectly. I mean, perfect. They are outstanding. The acting is great. The movie is garbage.
You didn't like the movie?
No.
Oh. I really enjoyed the movie.
I kept wanting it to, all right, get me to where I want to go. And then it went Quentin Tarantino now, not Quentin Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs, or Pulp Fiction.
Well, I think it had all of the Tarantino trademarks. It had the gratuitous violence. It had the altering history.
Yeah.
It had the foot fetishness. There are a number of shots where it's just on feet.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Tarantino. He's a weird guy.
Margot Robbie's feet.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily an awful thing.
It had...
And Brad Pitt's feet.
It was
but
to me, peak Tarantino.
But Pitt and DiCaprio were great. They were
excellent.
Great.
Everybody
in the movie.
I enjoyed the movie. Here's a hot...
I enjoyed the performances, but I walked out of the movie and I'm like, eh, what kind
here's
of
a hot
movie?
Take, maybe, that I'm going to circle back to from, I don't know, whenever... Before we started running through Leo's filmography, James Cameron, a very overrated filmmaker.
Oh, absolutely.
Very overrated.
That's not a hot take at all.
Okay, good.
That's bullseye.
Just fact.
That's bullseye.
Let's jump into some fan questions because we have them. And
we've gone down this rabbit hole. So
this is going to be our longest podcast, and we're not even talking about things
that relate
to Canes.
No, it's not going to be our longest podcast. It's going to be close, but not our longest. So.
All right, here's one from Matthew Herman.
Get to it.
In a Star Wars fantasy draft, who holds more value, Luke Skywalker or Baby Yoda? I feel like Baby Yoda would hold more value in keeper leagues and probably has a better chance of staying healthy since Skywalker has a history of upper body injuries.
Yeah, but Skywalker bounces back from those better, and he's now eternal because, as he told us, no one's really gone forever.
Yeah, look, I mean...
no one's ever really gone.
There's a whole saga surrounding Luke Skywalker.
I'm going to go with it's Luke Skywalker.
I'm going to go with Luke Skywalker also. But speaking of Baby Yoda.
You got the question? Because I have it here as well.
Oh, yep, there it is.
Okay.
Shannon Archer on Twitter, at Archer for Canes. Did you finally watch The Mandalorian? Thoughts? Yes. I finally watched The Mandalorian.
And?
I loved it.
I told you.
Yeah, it was so good.
Is amazing.
It was great. Baby Yoda, great. And I know, I think you mentioned this on the podcast before. He's not actually Baby Yoda.
No.
He is a child of whatever Yoda species is. Yes. We don't really know what Yoda species is. He's a child of that species, but...
He's 50 years old.
He's adorable.
50.
Or he? We're calling him a he. We don't even know.
Whatever.
The child is adorable.
What's the line that Yoda has, though? Look this good? You won't after 400 years or whatever
yeah,
it was?
Yoda's old.
Oh, yeah. Maybe older than that.
So I kind of... So I knew, you know, obviously from being on Twitter a lot and the internet...
It was amazing.
That
how they kept that a secret
right.
was what was beyond me. And then you watch it and it was amazing.
Well, I didn't expect... the child to show up in episode one, the first episode. So when it did, I was like, oh, wow. I thought it was going to come in to play later. And then it turns out the child's around for the entire season. And I completely was on board with it.
Yoda's quote, by the way, when 900 years old you reach, look as good, you will not.
It's a really good impression.
Thank you.
More questions. Yes,
the child was amazing.
I've seen The Mandalorian. I loved it. Jon Favreau did an excellent job with it. Much better than he did on the live-action remake of The Lion King.
Didn't see it. Didn't need to see it. I told you, I don't do Disney movies anymore, really.
I like a lot of Jon Favreau's work. The live-action remake of The Lion King was a miss. Here's one from Alex. Assuming that we get in a, that we at least get a postseason, what playoff format would y'all like to see, in your opinions? I think we've been somewhat over this. I'm for expanding the playoffs, and I kind of agree with you in that 10 teams from each conference seems like a decent idea. That at least gives the fringe on the bubble teams a chance to make it into the playoffs with some sort of play-in game, play-in series. Anything beyond 10 per conference, I think, would be sort of ludicrous.
Yeah. I think 10 for me is the sweet spot, because if you do that, you can, I guess, give a bye to the top two teams in each conference, however you want to work it out. Again, I'm also for, you know, having a first round, which is five games, not necessarily seven, but you're going to want to have seven.
Sure.
If you want to do teams one and two are out and teams 3 through 10 play the first round, and then you have a bye, and then you get into everything that's normal from there.
The final and the conference final at least have to be seven. Everything before that, I think, can be, you can juggle around if you must.
I think so. So, but that's what I'm just saying. You could do a first round with teams 3 through 10, and it's a best of five, and then you move into the first round, which is a best of seven, second round, best of seven, conference finals, finals.
So here's one from Beth at Candy Caniac. If they end up playing games without fans, what do you think they could do to make the atmosphere less like a ghost town? That's a great question.
You're gonna play music.
Yeah, play music. I think you would effort to have all of the usual elements of a game presentation.
I would agree.
It would just be without fans.
Yeah. You'd have a public address announcer. You'd have
a goal horn.
You'd have the goal horn. You'd have DJ. The song play. You'd have all of that.
It would just be without fans.
What I'm hoping is if it comes back, it comes back. You know, everybody is allowed in the building and you go from there.
I agree.
This one from Brooks Hill at Over the Hill 98. Next Canes number to be retired. If I had to be a betting man, it's number 12, Eric Staal.
Yeah.
The next one.
I would say 30.
30 is definitely in the conversation.
Just because he's retired already.
Yeah, but I just think you look at the record books and Cam Ward holds all of the goaltending records, which is number 30. But Eric Staal for the Hurricanes basically holds every forward record for the Canes. So the career that he's had, the season he had when they won the Stanley Cup, he was an all-star multiple times for the team. He's the guy who I would put the money on. That would be the next number to be retired.
Here's one from Kevin Kohler. Will we see the word Corona engraved on the Stanley Cup if there are no playoffs this season?
No.
No, it would probably just be like pandemic or playoffs not played or something.
Let me check what's on the Stanley Cup for
2004-05 is season not played.
Season not played.
Yep.
This would probably say season not finished.
Yeah.
I don't think that they would give any acknowledgement to the coronavirus.
Dan, if the season doesn't restart, have we seen the last of Mr. Williams on the ice?
That's a great question. We can't answer that. Only Justin Williams can answer that. Yeah. I would like to think that players like Justin Williams, Zdeno Chara, who we talked about with John Forslund earlier on this podcast, they're going to want to go out on their terms.
Yep.
I think Justin Williams can still play. So do we have, if everything is all equal, do we have another season next year for the Canes with Justin Williams like we had this year? Where maybe he's not at the start of next season, but he'll be there for the finish. And it'll be like adding a player for the Canes at the trade deadline. So I can't answer definitively. I I want to say no. That's where my answer is. Michael, where is yours?
Yep. I would hope no, but, you know, it certainly makes it difficult. You know, and John Forslund kind of touched on what the 04-05 work stoppage did for some careers. We're not going to be facing as long of a layoff this time around as then, but it's, you know, it is going to be interesting to see when the league returns, how the rosters shake out. You know, if you're trying to press play on a season that was previously paused, but you have some guys who maybe can't jump back into it, how does that change things? I don't know. It's a good question. I hope we haven't seen the last of them.
Ted Marlins, who has a great avatar of Mike Commodore taping his stick in his robe. By the way, Michael Smith has Mike Commodore's winter toque.
Yes.
And you offered to give it back. He never responded to you.
I think he's just fine parting with it.
It's fine. What happens to the Sammy Vatanen conditional pick if the season winds up canceled? They don't get it. That's my initial reaction. I'm sure there might be some contingency built in, but if he doesn't play a game for the Carolina Hurricanes, you cannot give a conditional pick away.
Less than five games.
Yeah, so...
Lee Taylor asks, what is the ideal start date to see Dougie and Sammy back on the ice for the playoffs? I mean, honestly, Dougie Hamilton was projected to be back in time for playoffs, which would be the first or second week of April. That's obviously not going to be when the season restarts, and Sammy Vatanen was projected to be back the first week of March. Now, obviously, that didn't happen. Yeah. He was dealing with a bit of a setback, but yeah, whenever the puck drops again, the entire team is going to be healthy, maybe with the exception of Brett Pesce, who had surgery on his shoulder and was set to be ready to go by training camp for the 2020-21 season, which in a normal year would be about mid-September. So depending on when the puck drops, you're going to have everybody healthy, and every team is going to have probably everybody healthy with the exception of guys who maybe have had surgeries.
All right. Going back to movies, John Gallagher, if you can insert yourself as an actor into any sports movie, which movie would you want to be in and which character would you want to play? I have two.
Okay.
Crash Davis, Bull Durham, that's number one. And Reg Dunlop, Slapshot, number two.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's my first and second place. Third place, Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard.
I was going to say Doug Glatt and Goon.
That's how I played, but no.
That's a pretty good one. This from R. Thomas.
Who would you be? Oh, you didn't answer. Are you not going to answer?
I'm going to say Doug Glatt. Oh, God. I'm going to jump right into it.
I figured I've put you in Rob Lowe is Derek Sutton. No, Derek Sutton, I think, was Patrick Swayze. Rob Lowe was Youngblood.
Or maybe I play Ben Stiller's character in Dodgeball.
White Goodman?
That was Ben Stiller's character. Yeah. Or Vince Vaughn's character, I guess. Play him.
Peter.
Or I could play Jason Bateman's character, who, if you look at that Jason Bateman, who, you know, that's a bold strategy, Cotton, versus like Jason Bateman now in, you know, Ozark or something.
Pepper Brooks.
Yeah, Pepper Brooks versus his character in Ozark is night and day.
Dean Youngblood. That's who I've got you pegged for in the movie Youngblood. Dean.
Yeah. I like that.
I would have to be Swayze as Derek Sutton.
R. Thomas, who I don't think is Rob Thomas, it just happens to be his Twitter name.
He doesn't want to be lonely no more.
We miss you all in the excitement of Canes hockey. Well, Rob Thomas, we miss you too.
Thank you, Rob.
Actually, I think his name is Richard Lorith. That's his handle, but his display name reads R. Thomas.
Holly Kearney. Holly asks, how are you two holding up?
Oh, we're doing good.
Yeah. Got the opportunity to continue to podcast, and you know, we're maintaining social distancing as best as we can, but yeah, things are all right, you know, all things considered.
Thanks for checking in on us. Thank
you very much, Holly. Thanks for asking. We appreciate it. So I got this from Steve. What are Rod's thoughts about the advantages of having right-handed forwards with his grinding forecheck philosophy? Well, considering we haven't been around the team in, what, 2 weeks now, Mr. Smith?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like a year, but I think 2 weeks is about accurate.
I'm going to go with every coach wants balance on their lines and their defensive pairings. So I think his thoughts are, if he's got right-handed forwards with the forecheck philosophy, it's a good thing for the team.
Sure.
I don't want to speak for the head coach, but he's been asked about having right-handed forwards in the lineup and how that makes life a little bit easier when it comes to having guys play their natural side. So there you go, Steve. By the way, is Steve a real person? No, Steve just joined in February of 2020. He could be a real person.
Yeah, he just needs a profile picture. Yeah,
he follows us.
Remember when Twitter used to be eggs for people who didn't have profile pictures?
Yeah. You need to follow Mike Smith Canes, by the way, Steve. Well, get on
Steve.
That.
Steve.
Come on now.
Come on.
Come on.
Is that it?
That's all I got.
All right.
Okay. Well, I think that'll do it for us. All right. Episode, this might be the longest podcast we've ever done.
That's going to be close. Cutting it close here. This last 20, 30 minutes or so has been somewhat of a departure. We've talked about a lot of things.
Started with the departed that put us on the departure.
That's true. And you know, when John Forslund mentioned the departure, all I could think of was The Leftovers series on HBO. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No, I have not.
The departure there was much different than our departure from New Jersey.
All right.
The departure in The Leftovers is 97% of the people on Earth disappear.
Oh.
Very different.
Okay. Have not watched that.
I highly recommend it.
Okay. You also like Lost. And I tried to get into Lost. I tried so hard to get into Lost.
It's my favorite television show of all time. It's that show introduced me to like what the medium of television could be, what storytelling could be on television. That for me, it was the OG of falling in love with television and the stories they told.
Ooh,
so
that's perfect. My answer. I'm not going to add on to what is maybe the best response I've ever heard here on Canes Cast, at least to something non-hockey related.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. Stay crispy, my friend.
Yep. Stay crispy, everybody.
Thank you.
Enjoy your storm brews in the comfort of your own home. Yep. And soon we can enjoy them in the company of our close friends and
all 5-star rated listeners.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I think this is a good way to wrap up this episode of Canes Cast 131.
Episode 131. Hopefully we get to talk to you next week.
Yes, and bring you episode 132.
But
we'll leave that.
We'll see.
Much like Lost, as a cliffhanger.
Yeah, the cliffhanger. Tune in next week with maybe we have an episode.
Hopefully the smoke monster does not eat our podcast. Wasn't it a panda bear or a polar bear?
There was a polar bear, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, there was just a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
Okay.
All right.
I needed the Sopranos. Just
next week's episode of Canes Cast will be us rewatching Lost.
Okay. I'm in.
It's going to be a really long podcast.
Yeah, I'll take maybe the longest to date.
Yeah.
For the web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you soon.
Moi moi.
Thank you.
Thank you all for listening to this podcast.